This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Country Duty Show on CliffCentral.com. My name is Dumisole. You can find me on Twitter at Dumisole. And today in studio, I'm joined by a lawyer, a fashionista, and a grammar of note. Tulana, hi, how are you?
Hi, Dumi. It's wonderful to be back on the show. Thank you very much and for that generous introduction.
But Kimmy, they just said, you know, I got to see you out in, and, you know, popping the light and properly lawyered up. And that's good.
We've been trained.
I guess. Thank you for joining us in the studio. We are taking your calls on 0861-555-189. 0861-555-189. Your WhatsApp text can be sent to 079-748-2090. 079-748-2090. And on today's show, we are talking racism in the workplace. It's not an easy topic, nor is it fun at times, but I think it's important that we tackle it and, you know, look at it from both a legal and a social perspective.
Definitely.
And I'm glad that you are here and you can talk to some of the legal issues and challenges that we're having. But before we even get there and before we even look at tweets and stuff, how's your week been?
It's been a good week. It's been a busy week. There are a lot of policy and regulatory interventions, and so one always has to keep abreast with what's going on out there. Because, you know, at least now there's a lot of focus of ensuring that the public is engaged. So we have to be that informative, engaging citizenry. There's the, you know, Section 25 of the Constitution.
Yes,
there's been a lot of movement there. So it's good to have the discussion going.
That's cool. And you know, while you talk about the Section 25 amendments and the likes, we just want to inform and rather update or encourage our listeners to make sure that they put in some submissions. It's always important to have your voice heard, even if it's a 2 or 3 pager. Mm-hmm. I've seen people going with 3 pages, no amendment. Obviously, that's their view, and they're entitled to do that. But if you feel strongly, put it up.
I think the crux of the democracy of South Africa as it has evolved now is ensuring that there is that engagement as far as public is concerned. You know, it's government by the people, for the people, and so we have to voice our concerns. And 100%. There's been a lot of instances where at least people have used their voice to ensure that they make a positive impact.
Indeed. That's why it's called a participatory democracy.
Exactly. That's the term I'm looking for.
You know, and it's needed, and for it to be effective, you need to make submissions and your voice is heard. And there will be meetings, rather, or town hall consultations that they'll be having. We'll find the dates and put up on our timelines and the likes. But it is important that you partake and make your voice heard. 2019 is fast approaching.
It is.
And it we've seen from the political side that there's just been too many things that have happened.
There's a lot of anticipation. I think even with the State of the Nation, now we've had the various departments that have presented their budget votes. We had National Treasury.
Yes.
So there's a lot of anticipation around what 2019 holds. What can we expect? What does rationalizing of government departments mean?
100%.
Who's in, who's out?
Of course. And now that you're talking about who's in, who's out, Supra today called it quits after some time, and him resigning and suddenly not resigning.
And there was a lot of roundabout on that. Hey, so one minute he's resigning, the next the ruling party is saying no, actually he can't resign, suspension or go, what was it, special leave, right?
That's the thing. But interestingly, it's stuff that he decides on. So at the end of the day, and it's terrible, but we are glad that he's gone. But what I found interesting, however, is he is alleged to have resigned. And in fact, he did say that he's going on early retirement, which is very interesting. But he's still the chairman of Northwest ANC.
So I think at the end of the day, it's about continued influence, right?
So that's what it boils down to.
It's perhaps exerting your influence from a distance. You don't always have to be sitting at the table to decide or have some sort of direction on the decisions that are taken at those platforms. So it's politics.
Indeed. and I think he plays it very well, and he knows this and knows it to such an extent that as long as he exercises a certain form of influence, then he will be taken serious. So otherwise, I think we've seen instances where Cyril has been undermined and undermined proper, and he's a strategist. That's the thing with him. And he acts after some time and stuff. But you know, in a country where we want decisions,
I think it's also worry. that time, because recently there was also the review of the first 100 days in an office by the of the new president, you know, and you had the various fractions. You had Musi Maimane saying he hasn't done much in 100 days.
Yeah.
So we're very quick to judge. We're very reactionary. But I suppose it's because some things have been taking so long.
Indeed.
And we were hoping for so much in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not as easy as just deciding who's in, who's out, and making those reshuffles and changes.
And the thing is, with these type of things, they affect us directly. As you correctly said, and I agree with you, in circumstances where something has been so historical, like the Zuma years, people want action.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, we're not getting that. I mean, on the news yesterday, they were profiling some business people from the Northwest. They've lost everything. And this was a government-initiated program.
Yes.
Supra was obviously in the middle of it and stuff. And you know, people have taken up loans. They've put up their houses as surety, and now they have nothing.
They've lost.
You know, how do we then say that's okay? And that's another thing that needs to be fixed. And I don't know if Tumamina will be able to mega fast.
About, because it boils down to accountability. Yes. Because you can make various changes in cabinet, but how do government officials, how do public officials rather ensure that there's some sort of accountability with their counterparts, right?
100%.
It's just like the right now there's the review as far as the whole SASSA debacle is concerned.
Oh, wow.
And you know, there's a new minister, but they're still dealing with the legacy of, you know, the recently exited minister.
I saw her today in parliament on YouTube and stuff, and she's there keeping a straight face. And for me, and I asked this question yesterday, you know, where you have billions of irregular expenditure, I mean, these guys would take so much money and hire marquees and books and flowers, and this is the money that could have gone to other things. And there's no accountability.
Exactly.
You can't pull that nonsense in the private sector.
You can't. And the question is, you know, you've got your PFMAs, you've got your treasury regulations, and there has to be that continued oversight, right? So you'd wonder what happened to those checks and balances, because it's not something that can only be addressed at a later stage through a particular sitting, a particular task team. We have regulations in place, and you have various levels of approval for exactly that, to ensure that there are checks and balances and accountability in place. And so when people are able to circumvent that, it becomes very, very problematic.
Indeed. And it also makes the mockery of the system. And,
yes,
and
this is precisely
where we find ourselves, we are in that situation where people must be held accountable and stuff. And in my view, it is important that this thing then is dealt with and it's done. I see that Zinwe Nyahu's, one of our listeners, is talking about a recent Constitutional Court judgment.
Mm-hmm.
We will obviously just discuss it in passing and just mention a few things and stuff, and we'll take it from there. But with Batabile sitting there, I think there isn't really going to be much. Someone pointed out that you know, we are going to find a situation where because she holds such power in the ANC Women's League, it's going to be problematic. Cyril can't get rid of her as soon as possible.
I think it's part of those concessions that certain fractions have said the president has had to make. You know, when we were anticipating the reshuffle, she was honestly top of the hit list, as in she must be gone together with other ministers. And yet what we saw with her, notwithstanding what happened with the whole SASSA issue, is deploying her from one department to another. And that begs the question of some of the concessions that were made. I know our listeners were actually round the clock, and there was a lot of video footage about, with Cyril coming and going from, I think it was St. George's and Irene.
Yes.
So there was a lot of, exactly. So there was a lot of activity. So it's perhaps some of the, you know, some of the engagements and concessions and discussions that have been had at that political level that we are not privy to as ordinary citizens, but we see the results.
Yeah. Although they may well be a bit slow, but we need that. One other story that caught my attention was the fact that SASSA, I mean, Department of Social Development, SASSA, hasn't paid some of the organizations their money. And these are organizations that are taking care of, you know, destitute and either people with mental illness and other related problems. And I don't understand, how does that work? Why are people not being taken serious?
Especially because there have been constitutional court judgments, there have been pronouncements at various forums through Parliament, through SCOPA, and there seems to be some sort of delay as far as implementing what some of those recommendations have been. And is it a result of some of the officials not understanding the gravity of the mandate of an institution such as SASSA, given the unemployment rates that we have, given the inequalities that we have? So every single rand counts for somebody who is below the breadline. And so it's unfortunate when you see our government officials not taking their mandate as seriously as they should, given the fact that they are serving South Africa and the mandate is critical to the, some people literally survive on those funds. So
they
it's appalling, actually, the approach that's been taken.
Listen, people must be fired, and it's important that it happens, and it happens as soon as possible. If the powers that be want us to take them serious, they must act. It's as simple as that. This political solutions to problems is not doing an ordinary South African who really needs, you know, that opportunity and chance a favor. One person also tweeted that, you know, with such irregular expenditure and such nonsense that's happening, it said that you'll find the same people that are complaining or that have been disadvantage voting for the same party, and it's worrying, you know. And it's madness.
Food parcel, Joe, just before the time, food parcel, here's a t-shirt, you know. And sometimes that interaction goes a really long way with members of the population. They feel as though they matter because, you know, he was in my house, he was in my yard, you see. And then they'll obviously talk about the legacy of the ANC back then, you know, the Tambo's ANC, the Mandela's ANC verse, and they'll try and use that to gain some sort of favors, to gain the confidence of the public.
Yeah, but and I agree with you, and that nonsense must stop. And I mean, there's been actually public protector finding on using food parcels to get votes, and they do it. I mean, I'm from the township; I've seen it happen.
Yes.
Despite what the public protector has said, because the monitoring of it and staff, it's always difficult, and
it is.
And you can't really do it properly, and that's where the danger and the difficulty is. But be that as it may, that's what it is. I know. I mean, the show today, and please do send your WhatsApp messages to 079-748-2090, and your tweets to at Tumisole on Twitter. Your handle @_gan.
No, it's just at Tolwana, and Tolwana yasa soto. So I'm gonna spell it. It's T H O L O A N A, and then the numbers 86 in numericals.
Yeah, and at Country GTZA, and we'll read your messages and take into account your comments and views. Tell us if you've had an experience relating to racism. Are you being subjected to it in the workplace, or have you found yourself, you know, defending a racism case either in the CCMA or the Labour Court? And how does your employer deal with it? Excuse me. So do join our conversations and chat. You'd have seen what happened Saturday night.
Yes.
And it's still a trending topic.
It is.
And I do understand your predicament, given that you are in the industry and you can't necessarily say much.
Mm-hmm.
But it also forms part of our discussion. And that's what inspired the show, because it talks to stuff that we not necessarily wouldn't really see to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, people look at racism and they would rather have it where someone says it and it's there, either from a practice or it's been expressed. But in those instances, it gets difficult, and you can't really articulate it. But without necessarily going into detail, and as I said, appreciating your position and where you find yourself in giving you the podcasting space, What do you think, just high level on all those things, do you think there will be a solution to this particular problem that has arisen?
What's encouraging, just to at least start off on a bit of a positive note, is that we are seeing more and more people calling out instances of racism. We are seeing more and more people voicing out and saying, I will not allow myself to be subjected to this kind of conduct anymore. So it's very encouraging because we need to have this dialogue, especially because, you know, we've had a lot of, previously we had instances, or there were highlights of instances where it was happening either at shopping malls, there was that KFC drive-through 100%. Issue, you know.
Yes. And that actually was also exposed by Country Duty. And we
hashtag, exactly.
That, people are...
So we need to speak about it broadly, because it really is something that permeates all aspects of society. It's something that you have in corporate as well. Yes. And the way that you would deal with it in corporate is quite different from if you were to have an altercation with somebody in a parking lot, for example. And how do we begin to address issues of structural racism, you 100%. Know, where in corporate, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have fallen victim to it. I also have fallen victim to it, you know. It's much more nuanced. And, you know, one is always a bit disadvantaged because, for instance, with me, I was a candidate attorney at the time.
Yeah.
Now, who's corporate going to actually protect?
Believe. And this is the thing. And we'll talk about your experience just after a musical break. And as I said, I mean, we're both lawyers. We're not going to go into detail and impang people's reputation or otherwise. But what we will have is really just to now get onto the meat of the subject. As I said, do join our discussion on 0861-555-189 hashtag Country Duty, and call us, as I said, and WhatsApp 0797482090. This is the Country Duty Show on cliffcentral.com, and do me, we'll be back just now.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to the Country Duty Show on cliffcentral.com. Remember, use hashtag Country Duty and tag at Dumisole and at Tulana underscore 86.
86, no underscore.
Oh, Tulana 86. on Twitter and at Country Duty ZA and at cliffcentral.com. And thanks for listening. Our WhatsApp line is 0797482090. Did you get our studio number?
No.
0861-555-189. I would think that you would listen and, you know, you have it going. But clearly, attention span is elsewhere. But yeah, anyways, sorry to put you on the spot. So, racism. We touched basically and briefly on this Ashwin Williams story. In your experience, you've seen it before and you've experienced it. What would you say for someone who's a layman and say, what is this thing, kutla racism here and there and stuff? What is it, if you were just to put it in a word or a definition, if any?
And I'm going to avoid using a legal definition because there's you know, various pieces of legislation that have defined what racism is. But what it boils down to essentially is prejudicial conduct that can be through speech, the way we treat each other simply because of one's race, you know, one being African, one being Indian. And so it's all about saying that you are better than the next individual because the next individual is Indians and you've got a certain predisposition to Indians. You know, and a lot of the times, as we've seen with South Africa's history, it's often between blacks and whites. So it's about perhaps let's just use a work situation, right?
Yeah.
Where one, there's preferential treatment of one race over the other. Indeed. And it's not equal pay, and it's not equal opportunities for the same type of pay.
Yeah.
But it's simply using race as a prism through which you would view one particular person as being inferior to the other.
Yeah. And it's very important because, you know, sometimes, and we did say that it's in the workplace and stuff, but this thing happens throughout and
everywhere.
All over. Find it happening in a parking lot, you find it happening in the mall, and it keeps manifesting. But I think it's very important because it deals with, as you said, a predisposition of one's race over the other, and you know, superiority,
yes,
where you say my race is superior than others. And interestingly, I mean, there've been debates of whether black people can be racist and whatnot,
yeah,
and stuff. And that's also a social issue, because people will tell you that, listen, blacks can't be racist because you know, they in as much as they're a majority, but insofar as power, because this is about power,
yes,
and dynamics,
yes,
therefore they wouldn't fall into that. But interestingly, the case law holds differently.
Mm.
What the case law says, it doesn't necessarily care. I mean, you'd have seen I think the newspapers today talking about Duduzani, not what was Zuma, Edwards,
yes,
who's now been found guilty of hate speech, and he settled it for 60,000 rand, and he'll pay that to charity. Interestingly, this is a black guy who was being, according to the settlement agreement, you know, spewing hate speech,
yes,
and he'll then pay for it. But what legislation doesn't do is to distinguish between black and white.
Yes.
If it's a racist act, as far as they're concerned, then it will attract the liabilities and stuff. Mm. Yeah.
Because that also is in context, and we always have to view issues of racism and even sexism for that matter,
yes,
within our broader social context and the history of South Africa, which interestingly enough has been one of the factors that a lot of courts have been using insofar as determining whether or not certain speech was racist speech or derogatory speech, especially when adjudicating over labor issues where, you know, one would call the other a swart man in a heated altercation, and then the recipient or the person on the other end would deem that to be some sort of racist derogatory remarks.
Yeah.
There would be disciplinary proceedings. People would lose their jobs, and, yep, you know, matters have gone all the way up to the Constitutional Court, and a lot of the times the courts have always been cognizant of South Africa's history and so far as how we interact with each other, particularly across races.
Yes, indeed, and that's exactly the crux, and we'll touch briefly on the recent Constitutional Court judgment where the Constitutional Court actually found that there were racist comments and derogatory nature and stuff. Let's talk about workplace, because I think that's where most of these things do happen. And really, there have been threads and tweets on these related issues. How do you, in your view, would you would say that racist undertones or racism manifest in the workplace? What do you think, or what have you seen?
So oftentimes it'll always be some sort of reference to one's race.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be as direct as a person saying that, you know, I'm just trying to think of some of the recent court cases. Something like, I don't know how you black people think,
yes,
if one,
yes,
was to express their views on something. Or, for instance, something that's closer to home when there's, yeah, a review, and then you're told things like, well, we do understand that English is not your first language.
Yes.
However, expectations are thus.
Yeah.
So it's always those nuanced references and engagements and impressions,
yes,
that, especially in the workplace, become quite problematic,
yeah,
because then, you know, one would be viewed as either being oversensitive, and you know how it is, you'll always be told, well, grow a thick skin, you,
indeed,
know, you mustn't be so sensitive,
indeed,
put on your big girl panties.
Absolutely. And interestingly, these type of things, especially in big corporates, some in the banking industry, some in the legal industry, and stuff, I've realized that there are themes associated with this. Ordinarily, employers do have policies,
yes,
and procedures,
yeah,
dealing with these type of things and stuff. And as you correctly said, racism sometimes, and loosely defined, is, you know, a disposition or a hate of one race over the other. But insofar as practice, and if you say this is a racist act, what would, for example, be seen or is a racist act in your view?
Again, it really goes back to how employees would engage amongst each other. We've seen various instances where it's either a remark that was made. There was that case as well that was heard by, I think it was a SARS case that,
yes,
that had to do with the SARS commissioner.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there have been others, especially in the mining industry, for example, yes, where, you know, the white manager would engage and refer to the race of his subordinates. And that would go through the entire process of the particular company, because, as you indicated, a lot of the times they would have policies in place which are really based on legislation. You know, you've got your Labor Relations Act primarily. Yes. You've got your constitution as the overarching legislation that would gives sort of guidance about how we should be engaging between one another as far as social cohesion is concerned.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times there would be those policies and procedures in place that employees would at least use in the event that they wanted to seek some sort of recourse.
Mm. But have you in your view, think these policies, I mean, one of the things that the labor law requires and the LRA is there must be a rule in place.
Yes.
That rule must be known by employees and it must be applied consistently and stuff. And if it's there and it's known and people know about it, the likelihood of, for example, if it's breached, the CCM or the labor court finding differently, you know, would say, but this is known and this is practice that is not acceptable.
Mm.
Do you think employees at least know about these things and are able to, for example, if there's racism in the workplace, able to report it? Do employees even talk about these things?
One of the practices that I've observed is, and I'm sure you've seen it in a lot of companies, that have like a whole spread of a bulletin almost of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act as well as the Labor Relations Act just simply posted on the wall.
Yeah.
And then they would be company policies that are in place, but I haven't often seen, and I'm speaking from my own experience as far as the various companies that I've worked in, where there is that active engagement of taking employees through what the policies are and 100%. What the policy changes and updates are and the impact of on legislation and ensuring that policies keep abreast with these changes and developments in legislation. You know, oftentimes it would be activities that would happen between HR and maybe the legal department or the compliance department saying, okay, there's now been a new ruling, there's now been a new practice note, and then just update your particular policy. There isn't that aggressive or active engagement with the employees to inform them what do the policies say, what does the legislation say, and what is the procedure that one can follow in the event that they want to lodge a grievance, for example, you know, because the recourse is determined ultimately in law, but each and every company has to take it upon themselves to ensure that they implement effectively and that they are seen to actually take a stance against racism and ensure that in the instance that there is an allegation of a racist incident, that there is a strong stance that's taken and that there is actually something that is done about it and not just, you know, an engagement that you speak to HR and then
ends there.
Exactly.
And I agree with you. And you know, this talks to knowledge and basically workshopping employees of this type of behavior. I think, you know, corporate SA, although it's great and stuff, but there's so many things that still needs to be fixed, and especially in higher level, because that's where most of the issues are. And if you raise it as a junior employee, for example, it may be seen to be taken into account or serious, but nothing materializes from there. And that's where the problems then arise and people then feel they need to resign and go because they feel that certain people are protected and stuff.
And the fear of victimization, right? Because there's then the power dynamics and it's different because at times, you know, the power dynamics of you for you as a black male would be very different as far as me as a black female, you know, because I may be dealing with not only racism but sexism as well, which is also another aspect of prejudice that manifests itself a lot in corporate South Africa. And, you know, with the recent incident with the individual walking off on SuperSport, there was a lot of engagement and a lot of people tweeting about their own personal experiences. 100%. Some have had to leave because, notwithstanding them following the processes in the companies, it really wasn't taken seriously, you know, to the point where some of the managers then will come back and say, listen, I'm actually going to make your life hell. Who do you think you are? Further reinforcing those power dynamics. And it then becomes an intolerable situation for an employee.
Yeah.
And they find that they've got no reason, I mean, they've got no other alternative but to resign.
Yeah.
There are other structures in place beyond just company policies and procedures. There is the CCMA as well that actually is mandated to assist as far as allegations of racism in the workplace. Yeah. But again, it speaks to whether people know that they can actually approach the CCMA for intervention. And the CCMA has been actually quite active. And you know, there's the CCMA. If you're not happy, you go to the labor court.
But what is the CCMA? CCMA Utu Airlines stuff. What does it do? And what's its function? I mean, one would expect, given the role it plays, I know what it is. I practice there. I'm there.
So
I'm so like
101
and stuff. But for someone who's listening and never heard of the likes of the CCMA, what does it do? And why, in your view, has it been created?
So the CCMA, again, in recognizing the power dynamics, and excuse me for just using this term to exhaustion, between an employer and employee, it's almost like a structure, and also keeping in line with the constitutional principle of ensuring that there's equitable access to justice and affordable access to justice.
Yes.
As far as employer-employee relations are concerned, the structure of the CCMA is to serve as exactly that.
Yeah.
It's a forum where a disgruntled employee can actually, maybe even an employer, depending on what the circumstances are exactly,
true,
they can at least engage that forum and approach that forum to address and intervene on issues relating to employer-employee relations.
Yeah.
And the whole point is to ensure that they are accessible. And so when it comes to issues of fees, their fees are very, very nominal.
Yeah.
And one can actually go and represent themselves. You don't have to go as with an attorney, with a legal representative. 100%. And in some cases, it's actually discouraged that you go with a legal representative, depending on, again, what the situation is. So the CCMA actually plays quite a critical role in ensuring that there is some sort of recourse for disadvantaged, most times it is employees, right? Because let's be honest, employers, oftentimes because of their financial muscle, they'll have access to lawyers,
true,
as opposed to, you know, an employee who's earning a minimum salary but has a case that needs to be addressed, because we all have rights and we're all equal before the law. And so the CCMA seeks to uphold that there is that recourse, 100%, and at least everybody's rights are respected, and where they're not and there's been an infringement of right, there is at least means to address that, address such incidents.
100%. And the CCMA, it's actually free. If employees are victimized or prejudiced at work, they need to and they can refer matters to the CCMA. It deals with unfair dismissals.
Yes.
There's stuff called unfair labor practices,
yes,
where if a promotion issue arises and you feel that it was given to someone and you have the qualifications and stuff, you can take that up. If you're not paid well, you can also take it up to the CCMA and stuff, and it's quite free and it's accessible. If you find yourself, for example, having lost at the CCMA, you can go to the labor court.
Mm.
The labor court has a pro bono office there, where it helps and assists in dealing with some of the issues. One of the tweets that then suddenly came, and the person says, I'd like to remain anonymous, and that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
And I just want you to provide a view to this person. The person says, I've got a master's degree in agriculture and went to an interview at a certain place that I'm not going to mention for a regulatory affairs officer for the second phase, and I wasn't given the job because I don't know Afrikaans and won't be able to translate perfect size label to Afrikaans. These are, you know, in agriculture, persecticides.
Okay.
Yes, that's the word. During the second interview, they asked me about Afrikaans and referred me to the agricultural remedy regulations, which clearly state that any language except for English should be done by a sworn translator. Racism is still alive in South Africa. What can I do?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because The challenge again about issues relating to discrimination, and we'll just speak about discrimination broadly, is there's fair discrimination and then there's unfair discrimination. And I think at times we have to have a balanced discussion about it where there are specific job requirements.
Yes.
And if you do not meet those requirements, like for instance, if you have to classify content, if you have to watch a movie and assign an age rating to it, and you go and you're visually impaired, it's not unfair discrimination, it speaks to the core requirements of the job. And 100%. So sometimes we have to bear that in mind.
Yes.
And then the other question is, should companies have to then expend their financial resources in addressing shortcomings of candidates?
100%.
That's the other discussion, see. So, We can't really give a direct remedy, but those are it's a difficult one. But and those are considerations, quite honestly, that one should bear in mind.
No, I hear you. And I mean, for me, what I would suggest, however, is you can actually approach the CCMA, point out what the job requirements were, and then who was appointed and on what basis. In fact, today I saw, I think, an award to that extent, and it may apply. So go there, find out, and ensure that you are equipped. And as we said, it's free, and it will be in your favor to do that. But
access to information is critical. You must always at least be given reasons as to why you didn't make it.
Absolutely.
And I always encourage people to actually go and find out why, because at times you might find that there isn't a particular reason. If it's something, if it's an instance where it's applications and they exceed a particular number, then they turn everyone else away without actually understanding what the implications are if you actually do not have rational decisions to support the rational reasons, excuse me, to support your decision.
Yeah, and so effectively those can be challenged and you can have recourse and stuff. So for instance, if someone experiences racism in the workplace and raises the issue with HR, and for some reason it's not dealt with, what would be recourse for this person? What should they do, in your view? Do they resign and go? What did you do, perhaps? And I'm sorry I'm putting you on this point. But, why didn't you take up this monster?
And okay, so with my particular case, I was working for one of the big law firms, and this particular individual, in fact, it's happened twice, come to think of it.
Yeah.
And again, this is somebody who brings in the fees for the firm, and you're there either as, a trainee or, as a candidate attorney. You engage with HR, and a lot of the times, and this is the worst part, is a lot of the times you would not have been the first complainant.
Mm.
There is that awareness as far as the conduct of this particular individual, but because they don't do it as blatantly and they don't do it as boldly or in a very obvious manner, it's more nuanced, then they'll have their discussions behind closed doors, and then it pretty much ends there without understanding that it really is completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
Racism or any sort of prejudice is completely unacceptable.
It can't be tolerated.
It can't be tolerated whether you are whether you are a director at a firm or whether you're a supervisor, whether you're a senior manager. Any sort of prejudice must not be tolerated. And I like the message that has been sent by the Constitutional Court, which has considered racism, particularly in the workplace, through various cases that have come before it. And so if HR doesn't work out, again, the CCMA has been tasked and mandated to actually start playing a much more active role in addressing issues of any sort of prejudice. Like I said, it goes beyond just racism in the workplace.
Yeah.
It's racism, it's sexism as well. Indeed. Sometimes it can go to as far as issues relating to sexual orientation. Some directors would say, well, I don't want to work with a person like a Morphe. That's sometimes the terminology strategy that's used. And again, such instances cannot be tolerated. If the internal processes that a company has or is supposed to have fail, then the aggrieved individual can go beyond that and go to the CCMA.
But I hear you and I agree with you. So effectively, employees are encouraged to exhaust your internal remedies, which is your HR process and stuff. And as I said, I mean, HR sometimes is toothless, and some people are saying that. And at least there's relief, which is the CCMA and stuff. But why do you think people would rather leave than challenge the status quo? Why did you leave? Why didn't you say this is bullshit and I need to deal with it?
So it's again the environment that you end up finding yourself in. You know, once so it's again about the environment that you find yourself in, and it's an environment that you have to face every single day. And at times it's about choosing your battles, because it will wear you out emotionally, it will wear you out psychologically, and then what ends up happening is it'll affect your performance. And then the individual has the upper hand, because they're not performing. We've had a performance review, nothing is improving. Do you see? So
that would, in any event, an LRA result in a performance review, and
you
ultimately
see,
you will be managed out, and then you're out.
And then it becomes an argument between employer-employee versus what the issues are, and then issues of causality. Are you now saying that there was a racist incident that had a psychological impact, and now that's manifested into how you perform? And then it becomes your word against mine as an employer-employee. So for me, because I just did not, I got exhausted, quite honestly. And what upset me even more was having found out that, in fact, the Monday that I started, that particular Friday, a black lady had resigned from working, who worked for the very same department, same individual.
Sure.
You see, and I just thought to myself, no, this is not a battle that I'm going to fight.
100%.
At the end of the day, I need to keep my sanity intact. I'm going to walk away. But some people honestly don't have that option, because they think, I walk away and then what?
Of course. There's bonds,
black tax, there's school. And so all the more reason to at least aggressively pursue all the avenues that are there. If HR doesn't assist, if grievance processes do not assist, at least you would have seen to try and make use of the structures that the company itself has, and them having failed you, you can then go on and approach the external avenues such as the CCMA, and as you mentioned, there's the Labour Court, Labour Appeal Court, and so it goes.
And I think I just have to point out, I mean, for employers who are listening to this show, acts of racism ought to be taken seriously. In fact, if an employer doesn't act, they open themselves to serious liability.
Mm.
And they can also be equated to sort of employment equity issues or unfair discrimination and discriminatory issues. I mean, and you don't want, as an employer, to be in a situation where you're dealing with a racist act and subsequently it is also discrimination and it's unfair, because they, you definitely have to prepare a checkbook. And I'm not, and that's the one side of it. And with social media, there's Twitter. Your info will be out there. You'll be called out, and you need to basically balance and take these things serious and act, because you know your failure to act attracts liability for you as the employer. But you know, as we've been discussing this and the difficulties, as you say, black tax for mainly black people who are affected by acts of racism, they don't have the might to challenge this type of things and stuff. Would you, you know, one of some of the things that employers have is what they call an anonymous tip-off type of thing. So instead of raising it with HR, and you want to preserve your sanity, or otherwise, you'd rather call that tip-off line. Do you think those are effective in your experience and what you've seen?
And you know what the challenge is at times you don't even know that the company has this particular avenue, right? Yeah. So you don't even know which email should I send it to, which email address should I send it to. And if you go to HR to ask about that and ask for that information, what you've essentially done is then put a face to the case already, which 100%. Might even dissuade you.
And you'll be victimized.
Exactly. And I think then the most effective way would be to address these issues through policies where you have employers and employees being addressed at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you as an employee, you want to have confidence in the structure and know that in the same way that I'm being told that I cannot engage in a particular manner with my co-worker, managers themselves know that they're held to the same standards, right? So we need to ensure that the policies apply across the board consistently.
In fact, it is a legal requirement from a labor relations perspective that policies ought to be known and it must be, you know, in place, then it must apply consistently.
Exactly.
I mean, employers have lost cases, for example, where they've preserved Van de Merwe and fired Jablani, or they've preserved Jablani and fired Van de Merwe.
Exactly.
Those things do happen, and they raise serious liability and consistency, and you know, they must be dealt with and called out. But you know, in a polarized country like South Africa, and put down employment rate and stuff, what do you think it will take, you know, to be policy racism? Are policies in an employment perspective enough? What do you think we need more? Do you think government, I mean, and when you are here, we discuss the hate speech bill and those type of things. I mean, because ultimately that becomes legislation, employers ought to incorporate it onto their policies and procedures. Will that help? Is there more that's required? What is your view?
What we essentially need is to bring these policies to life, to bring the legislation to life. And what I mean is they have to be effectively implemented. You can have the most perfect policy. You can have the most rational piece of legislation.
Yeah.
But if it's not brought to life, it's really just as good as being a piece of paper that is on a shelf somewhere.
100%.
So it really speaks to ensuring that we actually actively have this culture of social cohesion and engage openly, engage honestly, and respectfully on these particular issues, and that when they are raised, they are dealt with, because then what that will do is that will at least ensure that there is confidence in those particular processes, so that if I see that Dumi's my friend, Dumi said something that he should not have, and the company has taken a firm stance against it, first of all, it will make me cognizant that this is unacceptable behavior. Second of all, should I fall victim to such conduct, then I know that there are actually avenues in place, and I've seen them work. So there has to be that, and it has to be a constant dialogue. It can't just be because today it's World Human Rights Day, let's talk about human rights, let's sing kumbaya, let's hold hands, and then tomorrow everything goes on as normal. And when they happen, they have to be called out, they have to be addressed, there has to be a firm stance that's taken against it. I think it's through changing our own conduct and through changing our own mental impression, if I can even put it like that. It's only through behavioral change that they'll actually be a change in the workplace and in the wider society.
Yeah, and these conversations are important, and they must be heard. I think, you know, we mustn't ignore the seriousness of it. Do send your WhatsApp messages to 079-748-2090, and we'll read them in studio. If you want to remain anonymous, please do so. You can send us a DM. On Twitter is at Tolana86, and at Dumisole, and at CountryGTZA. We will keep on talking about this issue. As you said, I mean, legislation is great, but the awareness issue,
right?
And it's there.
It's
you're
there.
Right. Because I think what we normally do, and the risk has always been that we always want to create legislation.
Yes.
And
it's a knee-jerk reaction.
Exactly. And we don't want to look at things that are there and try and use them to, you know, to our benefit. And it's like this land issue, for example. The constitution is there. It hasn't been tested.
Mm.
There's expropriation bills that haven't been passed.
Mm.
Why are we inventing the wheel? And I think those are some of the dangers that we're facing, and they need to be dealt with properly. So you know, in as I said, in a polarized country and in this environment where unemployment is high and stuff, do you think we will ultimately reach a place where these acts of racism or otherwise are no longer in corporate SA or anyway, even in the malls and stuff? Do you envisage a culture of you know, getting along, humanity, black and white?
I have
and
a
stuff.
Dream that one day.
Yeah.
To me, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think each and every South African, and each and every person presiding within South Africa and the greater African region, it should really be something that we strive towards. We speak a lot about social cohesion, and it's one of the outcomes of the National Development Plan.
100%.
South Africa is a signatory to various treaties, the UN treaties and declarations within the African region through the AU.
Yes.
And why would we do that if it's not something that we at least aspired to? And we wouldn't aspire towards something if we didn't believe that it was possible. And yes, you will always have those fractions of society. You will always have those Orania states.
Yes.
You will
why is Orania still existing in a democratic country?
Moving right along.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You will always, and remember the other thing is you are ultimately talking about something that happens also in a very private space that government can't really intervene in. So my ideologies I'll pass down to my son, and then it becomes generational, and you can't really intervene through policy or legislation as far as those issues are concerned.
Indeed.
Because I honestly believe that, you know, our peer group, people who are racist in our peer group, I don't understand why. It puzzles me, because you've simply inherited something from your grandfather, great grandfather, and 100%. Now you want to impose it in a completely different society. And I'm not saying that, you know, racism is no longer relevant. Let's stop talking about racism. We should be over it by now. We can't be over it happening.
We can't.
Exactly. If it keeps happening, we can't be over it. You know, there are still issues of inequality that have to be addressed. But I'm just saying that for our generation, we cannot continue to perpetuate those particular ideologies. You know, yes, in corporate South Africa, you still have it. You still have issues of racism. You still have issues of prejudice. But let's at least ensure that we walk the talk. So there are policies in place.
Yeah.
We know that we are all bound by the Constitution.
Yes.
In fact, certain sections of the Constitution are binding beyond just citizens of South Africa.
That's right.
You know, certain provisions read and say every person. So to the extent that you live in South Africa, you must be bound by those constitutional principles of equality and the right to human dignity and the respect of human dignity, simply because of where we come from as a nation.
No, and that's really important. And I think there's an obligation on us to go in and go and spread the word and educate to the extent that we can our constituencies, and say to them, this is what it is. And when you experience this type of things, ensure that you don't really, at times you don't really have a choice and you walk away. But at times, fighting is necessary, and ensuring that your sanity is kept so that, you know, you're not only doing it for yourself, but you're also doing it for those who are coming. And that's really going to benefit generations to come. And these conversations ought to continue, because at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't help that it ends up on Twitter only and the newspaper here and there. And you know, now that I'm talking about Twitter and newspapers, I've seen a recent disturbing culture of ENCA, and I can say this because it's there and it's a fact, where this morning they put up a picture of a worker who was abused or rather assaulted by a certain Kobas de Klerk and stuff. And instead of putting Kobas' picture, they went on and they put in the domestic worker's picture. And I think it goes to responsible reporting.
Yes.
If really you want to sell a story, it doesn't really help much to put someone there, and as much as that person is the aggrieved one, but show us who this person is and what they do, so that we know that we can't be dealing with these type of masters in our workplaces and spaces.
Exactly.
And we need that.
Because we've seen then a lot of the times that's where your Twitter files will come up, you know, and start actually giving information about the perpetrators or alleged perpetrators. Let me emphasize alleged perpetrators in some instances. And you do want to have that balanced view. And if you are going to somewhat decide that you're going to respect the identities and privacy of one individual within an issue or an altercation, then perhaps you must afford the aggrieved party the same respect and the same courtesy, right? Yeah. Because some I may have been subject to something, but it's not to say that I necessarily want my identity to be splashed out there, you know, because I still may be trying to process and just understand and come to terms with what I've just been through. So I think if you're going to report, make sure that it's a balanced story. If you're 100%. Going to reveal one person's identity, think carefully about why 100%. You're not revealing the identity of the party on the other on the 100%. Other end of the story, because it has to be balanced, like you said.
And I mean, this is coming from an expert in the broadcasting industry, so we do hope that media houses take this serious. And that's the Country Duty Show on cliffcentral.com. Thank you for listening in, and your anonymous DMs and some of the WhatsApp messages that has come through. It was lovely. Let's catch up next week, Wednesday.
This is CliffCentral.com.